on Stony Brook 90.1 and 107.3 FM. Happy Friday, everyone.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
And alongside of me is my co-host and fellow advocate of Play It Forward, Kurt Ball. Momentarily, we will introduce our guest, Anne. Anne has an amazing story that everyone should listen to.
And she's just a great person, too. I'm very happy to have her in my life, so happy to have her on the show.
And I'm happy to have met you, Anne.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Getting showered with all the lovelies this afternoon.
Don't get used to it.
I will not.
Let's pass the mic to Sanjana for a closer look at what Play It Forward is all about.
Hello, everyone. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. The Play It Forward is a nonprofit that raises awareness, educates, and advocates for the fentanyl opioid crisis with a focus on prevention and recovery through peer-to-peer advocacy. So on our show, we bring in guests from the field of addiction, people in recovery, and more, and we discuss things like illicit drugs, fentanyl, and substance use disorder. Then toward 2 p.m., we shout out some welcoming and accessible resources, so tune in. We broadcast from Stony Brook University's radio station live every other Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we are now live streaming our previous episodes on Spotify podcasts under Play It Forward on our and also on our YouTube channel at the Play It Forward Project, where you can listen to our previous shows on the go. And be sure to follow us on Instagram at sbu.playitforward. And lastly, I'm excited to say that Play It Forward is a new club, so definitely come check us out.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. We're trying to continue and expand the advocacy on campus, and we would love to have more members, so feel free to come aboard. Presenting next is Kristen, who will share a few facts about fentanyl.
Hey everybody, I'm Kristen, and here's a few facts. Fentanyl, a highly potent synthetic opioid, is 30 to 50 times stronger than heroin. As little as 2 milligrams of fentanyl has been killing many people every day. 2 milligrams of fentanyl is just enough to cover Abraham Lincoln's nose on a penny. This deadly opioid kills one person on average every 11 minutes or over 200 lives each day, making it the leading cause of death for adults ages 18 to 45. This is similar to a commercial jet crashing every single day.
Our guest today is Anne. On behalf of Play It Forward, I'd like to warmly welcome you.
Thank you so much.
Anne, why don't you tell our listeners about yourself a little bit?
I believe that it would be best for me to speak about how I've been affected by addiction. I lost my brother 5 years ago on Easter morning from a heroin overdose.
I'm so sorry.
I appreciate that. Thank you. My brother was my best friend. Obviously, in the later years, addiction had driven a pretty decent wedge between us. I would still show up for him any way that I could. But with that all being said, I lost my best friend 5 years ago, and it's been tough. And going through my own journey, having experienced some of my own dark times, yoga became very important to me. So a couple of years ago, I opened up my own yoga studio. At the time, I knew your lovely co-host, Kurt Hall, and we started a wonderful relationship that's been very important to my healing journey. And through that, I had offered up classes to the men at Hope House in hopes that maybe I can help somebody experience a different life path than what my brother unfortunately experienced. Mm.
And that is what we're here today to talk about, is Anne's journey, my journey with Anne, and how we've connected over the years, how Hope House has brought us together, and how, unfortunately, the loss of her brother has also brought us together. But I think that in that loss, we have really found a wonderful friendship that I greatly value. And I know that she has had a really big impact on a lot of guys from Hope House. So, yeah, I thought we would just kind of get into it. If you want to talk a little bit about Cliff and maybe how things started. Yeah. And just kind of your experience with it all. I think that that's going to be the main thing today, is just been your experience with living with Cliff through his addiction, how you've lived with his passing and how you've been healing from that.
That's a big...
I know.
We're going to break it down a little bit from there.
Let's sort of tell us about Cliff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I love talking about my brother, which has kind of been a little hard since his passing. I've gotten better and better with it over the couple of years. And again, he passed on Easter. So this being so close to Easter, it is a little bit reminiscent for me, but all the more reason why I feel like I should talk about him. My brother was an awesome big brother. He was incredibly intelligent. He was incredibly good looking. He was incredibly charismatic. We grew up, I guess, I'm a little bit older than probably some of the generations that might be listening to this, but, you know, we would have a problem with a car and he would break down an engine in a matter of hours and have it put back together.
Wow.
The way that, you know, I would deal with my, you know, easy bake oven. how else to compare it? But he was an amazing guy, an amazing big brother. Unfortunately, we grew up in a fractured family. My dad was a Vietnam veteran. Mm. And this was kind of before PTSD, CPTSD was really acknowledged. So when he came home, he was pretty badly damaged. And obviously, that's going to affect the family system. So we all grew up with, I guess we all grew up with different coping mechanisms dealing with my dad, his PTSD, and his subsequent leaving when we were all fairly young. My brother's first arrest for a minor infraction was in his teenage years at a local parade. And again, he was a charismatic guy. So as much as there were problems that needed to be dealt with, he had that smile and that laugh and that little side eye that would kind of make you forget about the indiscretions that he had created or committed.
We're very good at that. Yeah.
And two, it's a family system. There's so much that goes into it that's kind of hard to break down in a little conversation. But as time went on, obviously his addiction continued to the point where I would say heroin came in, I don't know, maybe probably in his 20s, maybe a little bit later than that. And that was his problem.
Up until that, he was just kind of, I don't want to say having fun, but maybe it wasn't as...
Yeah, I guess kind of that idea of a recreational drug user.
Right.
You know, depending on how you feel about different substances, I like to think that he kept it on the lighter side of substances.
Right.
I think it was when he finally went away to college and kind of had time on his own without that kind of community family around him that he had a little bit more room to dabble. And I think that that's when things probably got to that point of no longer recreation and probably a little bit of a more significant issue.
Yeah, more of a necessity.
Yes, absolutely. No. Yes, by the end, it was, I mean, obviously addiction, yeah. It was 100% a necessity.
Yeah.
Towards the end, he wasn't happy with his life. He wasn't happy. He was aware that he was an addict and it wasn't a life that he was happy with living. But that's the problem of being an addict. It's a very difficult road to turn around on. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So that gives us a little idea as to who Cliff was. And then you mentioned that he unfortunately, I'm about to kick your water bottle over. He unfortunately passed on Easter about five years ago.
Yes. It was actually, I was teaching an Easter class at a yoga studio and the class had just finished and I got a phone call from my sister. And the second I picked up the phone, she didn't need to tell me what had happened. I was very much aware of what happened. I think that that's also kind of what happens in a family that is struggling with someone who has addiction. There is almost an unspoken language and there is almost a communication that goes on that doesn't really require a lot of verbal communication, which is weird for me to say because it was a phone call. So it's not even like I could see her.
But I think that for so long, you're living with that and almost, I don't want to say with the expectation that that day will come, but like with the, maybe the realization that that is such a possibility.
That phone call.
Yeah. You know, like I've heard so many parents talk about that, of always waiting for that phone call. And every time they'd get a call from a number they didn't know or something like that, it would always
100%.
You know, and I wonder if like when you picked up the phone, if it wasn't just that connection of you guys knowing that that day might come. And
yeah, because who really calls somebody at a yoga studio on Easter morning for something good to say?
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't think about it like that yet, but I guess I was going to set myself for that morning.
Yeah. And then that was...
Yeah, that, you know, and that's also part of it also. And that's, I guess, something that I might be of benefit in talking about because it's something that I grappled with for a long time. But before he passed, I, in a way, was hoping for him to pass.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be suffering anymore then.
And I say this all the time about him. This world wasn't meant for Cliff. Mm. Whether it be what he experienced himself, whether it be part of the fractured family, I felt like this world was just a little hard for him to walk on. And I think at a certain point also, you have to accept what is and you have to prepare yourself for the inevitable. So I think I had been preparing myself for the inevitable for, again, this was an addiction that was going on for 20 plus years. I was always amazed that his body withstood 20 plus years of addiction.
Yes.
Well, and with that addiction, you've talked about the consequences that he experienced being jails, prisons.
Sure.
Did he have any stints in rehab? Did he?
Oh, absolutely. I think that he had probably done 3 rehabilitations. And again, this is local. He had gone to the local hospitals. Mm-hmm. He had been through 30-day programs. He had been through, 48-hour detoxes. He had been through some longer term. But unfortunately, I think the longest term treatment that he got was within the prison system.
Right. And that was, that was how long ago, too?
Yeah, so he's been passed for 5 years. His addiction started 20 plus years prior to that. So we're going back.
Before it was like readily accessible. We talk about the stigma now. I mean, the stigma then was even greater. You know, we were speaking before that his first arrest was at the St. Patrick's Day Parade for pot possession.
Yeah. That wouldn't happen in public.
You know, now it's like you go into New York City and you're weird if you're not smoking. So, you know, I think that's it speaks a lot to maybe where we are now as far as more accessible treatment. And maybe there wasn't as many long-term things available for him then.
I agree with that 100%. As you know, I continue to stay involved, I guess, with the addiction family, but with the addiction community. And I am super impressed. Someone that is close to me recently went through a program, actually went through Wellbridge.
Oh, yeah.
And in talking to him and seeing how much more was available, this is going to be kind of like a nice segue into yoga, because when my brother was going through his rehabilitation or when he was unfortunately in prison, there wasn't really anything available to you. You were either going to kind of white knuckle your way through it in a detox program, and that was pretty much it. And it's really nice to hear that some of these other programs are inviting things like yoga in, are inviting things like journaling, and are giving people other ways to express whatever it is that might be going on internally.
Other outlets. Yeah.
That
yeah.
may be causing the outward symptoms we can so easily see and unfortunately judge people on.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really great point. Yeah.
I can very much relate because I as well lost my brother, and everything you're saying, it was the same thing for him too. They were very close in age, we discovered.
Yes.
And for my brother, it was 2017, and he also was in prison, in and out of detox. But the time frame that long ago, thank God we have evolved to a better place where, it's still a problem with stigma.
Yeah.
But thank God it's not the same as it was 20 years ago, because I can't help to think if maybe it was like that more now,
that they would have stood a better chance, that maybe something would have caught their attention, that maybe if they would have been offered this, it would have been an avenue out of addiction.
Absolutely. Excuse
me. We had somebody on, Linda Venture, on last week or a few weeks ago, I should say. And she was talking, I want to get into a little bit like this, not necessarily the family dynamic, but maybe your experience with having to set boundaries with Cliff or with having to, tough love, if you will. And something that I always used, at least, was enabling. We would enable the person.
But
really what we are doing is disabling the person. And that was like, that hit me so hard. And I was like, that's exactly what.
But now with that, talking about disabling the person, the unfortunate side of that is everything that we do out of love. We don't see it as, we don't see the harmful side of it. We don't see that enabling aspect of it. I see it as me doing everything that I can do to help somebody that I love. Mm-hmm. Because that's, in a sense, easier. It's a lot harder to draw that hard line. And unfortunately, towards the end of our relationship, I had to do that because you recognize that you become part of the problem. And I never wanted to be part of my brother's problem anytime he would go into the hospital, because unfortunately, towards the end, he had a hip replacement. And because of the addiction, and perhaps other things, he would continue to get infections. Mm-hmm. And the infections are what would bring him into the hospital. So when he was in the hospital, that would always be the first place that I would be happy to go, because I would be able to see my brother in a very coherent state as well as a controlled environment.
A controlled environment, for sure.
Yeah. And that was always very comfortable and much more easy for me. That doesn't mean that I wouldn't walk out of there hysterical crying, but I would be able to walk in, have a conversation with him like we used to have, and we would kid and we would laugh. And even then, knowing what I knew then, we wouldn't really delve into his addiction. And it was always that elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm. I think you said something interesting, though, about being the, you know, not wanting to see yourself as the problem. And I think that that is a really, really hard thing for people to do, because, like you said, we're doing this out of love. We're not maliciously helping, you know, we're not helping them with like a malicious intent. That's just, unfortunately, sometimes the way we help is perpetuating their use. So I think that that's a really hard thing for people to be able to look at as my love is the problem, almost,
it reminds me of Steve Hernandez, Steve Sr., when he was talking about what he was trying to do to get his son. He wanted to buy him a car. And he's like, how could I think a car is going to help this problem?
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, you start thinking of everything you can possibly do. And I saw my parents go through,
and nothing seems unreasonable.
Yeah.
Because you think that, okay, this is going to be it. This is what's going to wake him up. This is what's going to draw him back. And unfortunately,
because the other side of that is death. That's so, of course, you're going to do everything you can possible. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I just thought that the enabling versus the disabling thing is such a powerful statement, for at least for me. And I can really see that in so many situations with guys from the house and just people in recovery now, hearing their stories.
Thought provoking.
Yeah.
You know, like, wow, let me think about that. Disable. Yep. You, in a sense, do disable them when you enable them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So now you are very much involved, obviously, with yoga. And I want to talk a little bit about, you know, how long have you been doing yoga first? I'm asking that. And that's not even a podcast question. Well, that's actually like a Kurt.
It's because Kurt,
a Kurt question.
It's because Kurt does yoga with me so often.
Yes, thank you.
I started my practice probably about 11 years ago now.
But have you always done yoga?
No, I got into yoga because I was dealing with my own, you know, dark past.
Yes, yes.
And I was dealing with some of my own issues. And somebody actually had turned around to me one day and said, well, why don't you try yoga? And that got a response out of me that wasn't very yogic, but it was that seed that was planted. And so I gave it a shot. And for me, it worked.
Yeah.
Moving my body, just getting reacquainted with my body, was very important to my healing process. And it has continued. I am continuing to evolve and to grow and to heal from issues, both with my brother and personal issues. But yoga has been incredibly important, incredibly healing. And when I met you and our friendship started, and I got to experience guys going through addiction in a different way than I had seen my brother through addiction, that kind of opened my eyes up. That got me a little excited because
I
saw
a way. That's like, I don't know if I ever really thought of that. Like your prior experience had been with losing somebody, and now you have these guys coming in who are essentially finding themselves and learning to live and coming back to life.
And a reminder of your brother.
Yeah.
And in some cases, that has been fairly difficult.
Right.
And as Kurt knows, there have been a couple of guys that have walked in, and the second I saw them, it was a little heart stop, because something that they did or something that they said or a characteristic that they have is incredibly indicative of my brother. And I also wonder if that's part of addiction, like that mask that addiction wears, that addicts have a tendency to fall into certain behavioral patterns.
Oh, I see that.
Totally. I'm sorry. Now I lost track of what we were originally talking about.
how interacting with the guys, how the guys coming in are, you know, you've experienced the cliff side of substance use.
Okay, so first thing that comes to mind is that idea of stigma.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's growing up and when it's in your family, you want to try to hide it. You want to try to keep it safe from the world. You want that to be your tiny little secret because of that stigma that's attached to it. And
is that what you got?
100%. It was not something that we spoke about. It was not something that we really talked about at all. It was our dirty little secret. Mm. And so that was always my approach to it. So when I met you at Hope House, that was the first time I had been in an environment like that. And it was a very different experience for me. I had only seen addiction and the downfall.
Right,
I had never
right.
seen addiction and the outcome of some of these guys who are able to successfully go through rehab.
When we met, I only had 2 years at that point, I guess. So I really was still kind of like just getting my feet wet. And yeah.
But that's also, I think, why I was comfortable with you.
Right.
Because I could still see that struggle in you, and that struggle in you made me feel more comfortable
okay.
with talking to you about my brother, because it was familiar.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
was comfortable.
Totally.
100%.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
seeing men on the other side has been incredibly inspiring. Like, and I know that sounds cheesy and corny and cliche.
Not at all.
But watching these guys, so there was one in particular who came in for when we first started offering classes. Maybe he was in there for the first or second class. And I mean, there was no body awareness. We didn't know my right foot, my left foot, my arm, my ear, like not even left and right side. Like he had a hard time differentiating his arm from his leg.
Yeah.
Because you get in that state of disassociation. You literally are removed from yourself, from your body.
Yeah, wow.
And it's probably been, maybe about a year and a half, 2 years that I've been practicing with him. He graduated.
Oh, we don't, John.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Too bad, John. You're out.
John, congratulations,
yeah,
John.
Yeah, yeah.
And namaste.
Yeah, yes.
And to see him know himself.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I know that that's not yoga. I know that that's a whole span
yeah,
of
yeah.
healing and a whole span of work. But to watch somebody come from that place and now graduate, you know, go out and work
mm-hmm.
and go out and reestablish himself.
I mean, and know, and he's able to make a left-hand turn and know that it's a left-hand turn.
Yeah, and yeah. he knows like, where his foot is.
Yeah,
right?
He's up here. The last class that he took, he was doing arm balancing. He was doing Warrior Three. Like he was
okay.
owning the floor. And when he walked in, I was like, there's no way I'm ever going to see this guy again.
That's
like,
awesome.
This is
yeah.
going to be the
yeah,
last
yeah.
time we ever interact with each other.
Yep.
That's
yep.
a beautiful, inspiring story.
Yeah.
And that's been, there's been so many guys like that who I know would share the same sentiment of it being such an inspirational
well,
thing.
If I knew Fritz's real name, maybe I'd.
Fritz is. Great. And that is a great, that's a great segment into our mid-wrap break.
Yes.
And we'll be back in a little bit with more from Ann.
Yeah, you're doing great. We will be right back. And so by now, almost everyone knows of someone that has died this way. We must remember that these deaths are preventable. Each one of us has the power to make a difference. To all parents, we understand these conversations can be challenging, but don't fool yourself into thinking, not my kid. Let's equip ourselves with knowledge, resources, and empathy for these crucial discussions. And to everyone, talk to the people you love. Your words and support can be life-changing. One pill will kill. So we're going to play a special song, and we will be back shortly with Amazing Anne.
That's amazing.
Yeah, amazing Anne. Oh, God, yeah.
You are amazing.
We're going to make that door bigger because your head's going to be too big to fit through.
You are listening to WSB Stony Brook 90.1 and 107.3 FM. We'll be right back.
Don't worry.
everyone, to Play It Forward. You are listening to WSB Stony Brook. I'm Allison, and I'm happy to have Anne with us today. So let's pick up where we left off.
I'm here also.
Allison, I'm happy to be here with Kurt.
Co-host Kurt, yeah.
You're co-host Kurt.
But yeah, so yeah, that was a nice little shout out to Fritz Fitz and
Bruce.
That was his other name. Yeah. He'll never listen to this, so it'll be our little joke. But yeah, so I don't know if we really, you briefly mentioned in the beginning that you have been doing yoga with the Hope House guys, but I don't think we've really kind of got into just what that is and kind of brushed over it before. But I just want to maybe acknowledge Anne's commitment to Hope House, to people in recovery in general, and especially to the boys that show up regularly to her class, which is called Clippy's Class. And yeah, I mean, talk about that a little bit. And like, how did you come to that point? We talked about it.
I was just going to say, it must have been something that me and you had a conversation about, because I wouldn't have obviously done it without you.
Definitely invited me to come.
I'm still waiting for him to come. Now, the best way, again, it's very important for me to say that I think the addicts in our lives need to be seen, need to be heard, and need to know that they're loved, and need to know that there's a place for them. That it's so easy to judge, and it's so easy to look at somebody and see them as an addict and turn away from them. But that addict is my brother. And I see all of those guys like my brother. And because I own my own studio, it's actually easy for me to teach yoga. So it's easy for me then to teach a yoga class for the guys from Hope House. So I started Clippy's Class. It's probably been going on for about 2 years. And it's a class that I offered specifically for Hope House or for anybody going through rehabilitation or addiction issues. I also am very aware that people who have gone through these issues financially, yoga is not accessible. So I made sure the first thing I did was to offer this class free of charge.
Wow.
Which is just like, you know, take a second to like recognize that, because these guys come in here, they don't have anything. I was one of those guys. I still am. I still mooch off for classes. Anyway.
I love that you mooch off.
Yeah, good. I wasn't going to stop. But, you know, these guys come in with nothing. They have often no support from the outside. Hope House is certainly not in a position to be financially responsible for them doing
that. Taking yoga classes.
Yeah, you know, especially regularly like that. You know, if it was like a once in a while thing. So, you know, I think it's just such a powerful just sacrifice, or I don't even know if it's a sacrifice for you, but it's just a powerful thing that you do for them that I think maybe is a little unappreciated or often goes unrecognized, your commitment to that. And, you know, I know that like John and other people who are regulars there and stuff, like really, you know, it's something that they'll take with them.
Well, and it's funny too, because at first started out, I've never taught, you know, they have YSR classes that are specifically geared towards AA, and there are different programs that you can take that give you a little bit of a background. I don't have any of that.
Right.
I just have a brother who I lost, who I love and who I loved. And as I said, I see him in every one of their faces. And I like to think that maybe if somewhere along the way, my brother was offered something other than a 30-day stay or a quick detox, that maybe he would have had a different outcome, or that maybe there would have been, you know, just a different outcome, a different way that this all would have worked out.
That is so important, what you just discussed. Because first of all, God bless you for doing that, because they would not have been able to go otherwise.
No.
And the fact that you are offering this for free is an example of what we all can do.
Yeah.
Everyone has something they can offer. And I really wish it didn't take losing someone.
Yes.
Losing someone in order for you to take some kind of action.
But I mean, if you look at it, I mean, that's why I'm on this, is because of all the people that I've lost. It's why you're doing this, because of all the people that you have lost, you know.
Well, the hope is that eventually we'll get to somebody before we lose them. But
that is the hope.
Yeah.
It's an epidemic.
Yeah.
It is something that unfortunately is happening more and more often, and not less and less often. So things like these podcasts, just me and Kurt having a relationship, and what we've learned from each other, and even how our relationship has helped each other heal.
Absolutely.
We need to have more conversation. We need to be more open about the things that we are all, that every family is dealing with in one way or another.
Yeah.
You nailed it completely. Yeah. Because all of this stems from what we have learned is maybe undiagnosed mental health issues, depression, loneliness, trauma, right? It's in the family. But where is the information for people, the coping skills? How do we
encourage people to develop healthy coping skills? Because you know, this is something that I've been spending a lot of time thinking about and talking about in therapy is, you know, I didn't have healthy coping skills when I was younger. And in the family that I, you know, come from, you know, we did not talk about our problems. Yeah. Everything was swept under the rug. And that was how I went about things until I found a really unhealthy coping mechanism, which was alcohol. And then that progressed, you know, and I just have to wonder, you know, I have my son, Jaden, who's 12. I try to encourage so many different healthy coping skills from him, whether it's journaling, whether it's meditating, which he doesn't like to do. But, you know, sports, exercise, and like there's so many things that we could be encouraging people to do. And I feel like we really fall short in that.
Yeah. And it's also encouraging people to be their best.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Or accepting them from wherever they're at.
Accepting who they are.
If that's your best, then that's, you know. Yeah.
Well, and that's part of it too, because, you know, yoga is often thought of as a more feminine practice. Mm. So it's going to be a little bit more difficult to try to introduce myself to a group of men who have probably, I don't want to make assumptions, but have held a little bit of a more difficult life. Who might not be super encouraged to go and get on a mat and try some funky postures. But for that one guy that I might be able to meet, that I might be able to have a positive effect on, you know, if I go through 30 guys that think yoga is ridiculous and never come back in the studio, that one guy makes it all worth it. But that's always the story in addiction.
Right.
And on the other side, we all just want to help somebody do a little bit better.
And it must be healing for you. I can't even imagine like how cathartic it must feel.
Cathartic, but also at the same point, incredibly painful because I'm able to see these men do all of the things that I so wished my brother would have been able to experience.
Oh, girl, I'm holding her hand right now because I really can understand what that feels like.
When I see his face in each one of these guys and I see them succeed.
Oh.
It's amazing. It's inspiring. And at the same time, it's a reminder what he didn't have the opportunity to take part in.
Yeah.
There is definitely a similarity because when I see those guys too, I also see my brother, you know, and it's not because they look alike. It's their demeanor. It's their swagger. It's
the pain that they've experienced.
Yeah.
You know,
it's almost like you could feel it.
Yeah.
You know, and I really, people, if you're listening, please be listening. but seriously, if you know somebody that's struggling, reach out to them.
Uh-huh.
Because people, we all want the same thing. We want love and acceptance. We want purpose in our life.
We want to be seen.
And not only that, unfortunately, when you are labeled an addict, it's a lot easier to turn your back on that person. It's a lot easier to ignore them and think, oh, you know, they'll get help. They'll take care of it. They'll find somebody.
Or this is a choice that they're making.
Oh,
100%.
Yeah. This is not my problem.
And you don't recognize that that's the world that they're approached by every day, a world that has kind of turned their back on them. And because they don't know how to deal with them, it's easier to turn away from them. You don't know what reaching out to somebody might do. You don't know if your, hey, how are you text message or how you feeling today phone call, if that might be something that really, you know, brings them back from the edge.
Yeah, or smiling on a stranger on the street where you can sense that person's not well. You know, that goes such a long way.
It's easier to turn your back. It's harder to turn around and smile and confront it for what it is.
Yeah.
Somebody who is struggling.
I want to circle back to, we were talking about the unhealthy coping skills and how we can encourage people to, or I'm sorry, talking about healthy coping skills and how we can encourage, I don't want to encourage anybody from unhealthy ones, but how we can, you know, encourage that more. And we were speaking before about how we can really get the message out to young people and the difficulty that we've experienced with the club on campus and maybe not difficulty, maybe that's the wrong word, but, you know, we
resistance.
Want, yeah, maybe a little resistance and some of the roadblocks that maybe students experience with talking about addiction or talking about loved ones that they've lost and how we can make it, I don't want to say more appealing to students or yeah. more appealing to young people, but how do we make it more easily talked about? How do we have more of an open dialogue about it? And some Anne had some good points. I don't know if you remember them or not, but
I think, and especially in, you know, this age of technology, when it's so much easier to look at a screen than it is to have a conversation, that conversation just doesn't happen as easily as it did, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So that's a huge obstacle that you have to cross over. But at the end of the day, I think everybody wants to be heard. And unfortunately, I think everybody has been touched by addiction. So I think a great way to reach out, especially to the younger generation, is to ask them, hey, what is your experience with addiction? Unfortunately, I can say that I'm pretty confident in the fact that they are going to have an experience with addiction.
Yeah.
And whether it's a mother, a brother, an uncle, a boyfriend, a girlfriend,
totally.
It's out there. We all experience it. We need to get more comfortable talking about it. And I was very lucky that when my brother passed, I was in therapy. So I was able to process a lot of what was going on internally. But I also think that a lot more people are in therapy. I just think that we need to just break past that little doorway of that stigma of thinking that we need to keep this tight and buckled up inside.
Right.
It's not helping anybody. It's causing more issues. So in a sense, that is enabling. Not talking and not being honest about our experience, we're enabling ourselves.
Yeah.
We're keeping that aspect of ourselves hidden. And
are we
that's
enabling
not
ourselves or are we disabling ourselves?
Ah,
yeah. Oh, see what I did there?
Well, to remain silent is contributing to the stigma.
Yeah.
You know, silent equals
death.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, I mean, I don't want to put it bluntly, but, you know, if nobody's talking about it, then that's what's going to happen.
I think that's what it's going to take is some jarring conversations.
I do want to put it bluntly, I mean.
You do want to put it bluntly. Yeah. Well, we need to.
You know, and I say this all quite often, and ironically, I started watching Dope Sick on Hulu again last night.
I was going to start watching that again.
It's so good. It's about you've seen it, right?
Dr. Stephen Lloyd is going to be at our...
Fentanyl Awareness Day.
Yes,
on May 7th in Hot Walk. We'll talk about that after, towards the end of the
towards
show.
Towards the end.
But, you know, he, when we went down to the Trail of Truth rally in D.C., he spoke about, you know, he speaks all over the place, and the amount of politicians, the amount of celebrities that come up to him after he speaks and says, hey, off the record, my son, hey, off the record, my daughter. And that is the problem. And that silence and the unwillingness to talk about everybody that is experiencing this. And it's not just limited to the, you know, quote unquote, the lowly people, but it's in every area.
And typically the people that are doing this are politicians, celebrities, people that we need them to talk about.
That have the platform, that have the followers to really get everybody.
That's the thing that infuriates me the most. All these celebrities that have thousands of followers. Mm-hmm. I mean, a simple PSA could go a real long way. Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, it's the thing that nobody wants to talk about.
Right.
They're going to get a lot more followers. They're going to get a lot more response talking about the sneakers or the phone or
their
clothes.
And that's the problem with our society.
But that's also part of it is that when you open yourself up like that, you're vulnerable.
Yeah.
You are opening that door for what you perceive to be judgment. Oh, they're going to think this about me, or they're going to say this about my family, or they're going to make this assumption about whatever it is. When you recognize how it is so evenly spread out across all demographics, across everything, that disappears, but it's getting to that point. So again, going back to trying to get some of more of the students involved, ask them.
Yeah.
Ask them, how did you suffer? What is your experience? And I really feel that you're going to be blown away. Once you have a safe place to start a conversation,
that is a key thing.
It comes out. Mm. But in a larger group, in a bigger forum, it's a little intimidating. Mm. I wouldn't have done this if I was coming to speak in front of
Okay.
Honestly,
yeah.
Three is good.
Yeah.
Probably more than three, I would have been a little bit more hesitant.
Okay. Yeah, you know, we do have to think of it from the younger people that we are trying to reach.
You know, communication is not the same for them
absolutely
as it is for us. It's a phone, it's a screen.
And it's also, if they, you know, for myself at least, it's been 7.5 years of me being very open and very, this is my life and here I am, judge me if you will, I don't care. You lost your Cliff 5 years ago. You've been pretty open about it, more or less, coming to terms
in your controlled environment.
But even for you too, I mean, Allison, you're starting this podcast. You're putting yourself out there, being vulnerable, allowing yourself to, you know, be judged, to be seen, to be heard in whatever capacity people are viewing you in. And I think that maybe we have a slight advantage in that sense because we're just kind of, this is it, at least for myself.
We've suffered the losses.
This is it, right?
Because there's nothing else that addiction is going to take from me.
Yes.
So I might as well start giving back.
That's exactly
what else you got?
It.
Yep.
Wow.
100%. Yeah. So... is there anything that you want to leave listeners with or any?
We still have a few more minutes.
Oh, do we?
What was the one thing we were going to go back to?
I don't know.
Awesome Anne.
Awesome Anne.
Let's just circle back to that.
Yeah, that's great. I'm never going to hear the end of this now. Yeah. No, I don't know if there was anything.
There's always something.
There's always something.
There always is something, unfortunately, with addiction.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I think is very interesting also, going back to this idea of starting communication and being a little bit more open about it, is how Kurt and I actually met. I had been teaching yoga. One of my yogis, who is she was a good friend to me. Her son was in Hope House.
Chris, he was on the show.
Yeah. And,
oh, wow.
And my brother passed and she turned around and said, I really think that you should take a trip up to Hope House. And I was like, well, my brother is dead already. Like, what is going up to Hope House going to do for me?
Were you shutting down at that point?
Yeah. It made me angry. Yeah. That comment made me angry. And
oh,
I did not. And because she had been telling me, I think it was probably about 2 months of her trying to get me to go up to Hope House before I actually went up there.
Interesting.
Yeah. And again, too, because my idea of an addict was a guy in the gutter, you know.
Okay, yeah.
And why would I want to expose myself when everything with my brother was so raw?
Yep.
Why would I want to expose myself to 20 of those guys? Like, insane to me. But I'll never forget that day. Walking up, going back up to where you now have the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a little hammock there. Mm-hmm. And Kurt was there. And again,
I was not in the hammock. I was slaving away in that garden under the heat.
But there are, again, even the same way that I was saying that I see so much of my brother and a lot of the Hope House guys, obviously I see a lot of my brother and Kurt.
Yeah.
And he was wearing a tie-dyed shirt like my brother so often adorned himself in. And there was just instantly that connection.
We sat there for hours talking.
Yes.
It was a couple hours
Wow.
Yeah. I hadn't seen an outsider in a couple of years too. So
that's when you guys met.
Yeah.
That's a really great story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's what led me to Hope House, because my brother had passed through the doors of Hope House.
Mm.
My brother's service was at Hope House. I was at her brother's
service.
Yeah.
How wild is that?
Yeah.
5 years ago? What, 6 years ago?
No, it's going on seven.
Going on seven, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when my brother was at Hope House, again, it was that chain. I had never, even though my brother had been through there and they have family programs and everybody is always welcome, I never stepped foot into that place. So it was also a weird thing for me to go through, having not accepted it with my brother.
Wow.
And then going down and accepting it for a bunch of strangers.
Yeah,
It's been a process.
Yeah.
It's all been a very complex yet simple process.
Yeah.
I think the work that you're doing, you're doing God's work. I think that is... It's so beautiful what
she's
you're
great.
Doing.
And then,
offering for these
she
guys.
I'm just going to come back so you guys can keep telling me how awesome I am. Can we do the next
it's
podcast
so funny, though,
on that?
I'm not kidding. I go to her with all my problems anytime. And I go to her with all my good stuff, too. But a lot of it has been problems over the last couple of years. And going to her, you know, I go in there and we'll do class. And then I'll sit there for a half hour, an hour, 2 hours afterwards talking with her. You know, and I think that, at least for myself, I'd like to think for Ann, too, it's been a really healing mutual relationship that
Well, I feel it. I'm feeling the energy. Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, you're definitely a healer for sure.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt that your brother is looking down on, so proud of what you're doing.
And I can, and again, even this morning, I had a therapy appointment this morning, and I was thinking that, oh man, I'm not going to be able to go through this. I'm going to be crying. I'm going to be so upset. And it's actually wonderful.
Oh, you mean for the interview? Yeah. Oh,
but I was wondering.
It's wonderful too. Again, when you are around people who have experienced a similar journey,
you're in a safe space.
You're in a safe space. And this, I think, is how you reach out to people.
Yeah.
And this is how,
and it's how you heal.
You bring people in.
Yep.
And share your story.
Yeah.
Your story is unique to you, but in a broader sense, it is all of our stories. We've all walked a similar path. We've all had similar experience. Yeah. So it might be Cliff or it might be Bruce or it might be John.
Yeah.
The more open we are and the more willing we are to be vulnerable and the more willing we are to be seen, the more we're going to be able to help and the more we're going to be able to be seen as a beacon for somebody who might be stumbling through the dark a little bit.
I was just talking with a guy yesterday who was, he reunited with his aunt and uncle. The last time that they'd seen him, he was, you know, full-blown alcoholism, running rampant. He sees them now. And he was talking about how he's very self-conscious of being sober and not being that person anymore. And it was almost speaking to it in a negative light. And I recognize that. And I remember being in that position of being ashamed of my past and being ashamed that I carry this stigma kind of, you know?
Yeah.
And I said to him, dude, you have to turn that around and use it as that is the most powerful thing you've got because it's so unique to you. And there's so few people, you know, I consider myself so lucky that I made it to the other side and that I did not wind up as a Cliff, as a Steven, as, you know, there's so many people that I've lost over the years. And I consider myself so freaking blessed to have made it to the other side that we owe that to other people.
Yes.
And we owe our stories to other people to give hope, to give light, to give inspiration that this is possible.
There's a way out. There is a way out. Oh, wow.
So, Anne,
thank you.
I love you. Thank you so much.
You are amazing.
Yeah. I've tolerated you.
Yeah.
Allison, thank you so much.
Oh, Allison is wonderful.
You know, you have been, it's been such a pleasure to have you. I think that you touched a lot of people today. I really do.
And that is very wonderful to hear. That makes me feel really good about being here.
That's really great. That makes me happy too, because that's why we do this.
Like
we're turning our pain into purpose.
Beacons of light in a world of shattered dreams. It's a Father Frank.
Shout out to Father Frank.
Yes.
So, Anne, thank you so much again for being our guest today. And I sincerely thank everyone who supports our cause and understands how important it is to look out for each other and to empathize with anyone you know dealing with addiction. Let's continue to spread awareness about the dangers of illicit fentanyl and promote harm reduction tools like Narcan and fentanyl test strips. Reach out to us via Instagram at sbu.playitforward for more recommendations. And Kurt will be giving you some resources.
But let's real quick, Grow House Yoga. What are you doing here? Throw that in there. Yeah. Talk about. Where are you?
I'm Anne. I am the owner and the instructor for Grow House Yoga. It is in Sound Beach. I don't know my address. I believe it is 6 New York Avenue.
New York Avenue.
Oh, yes,
it is. Same thing. You can find me easiest on Instagram. You can also go to the website, growhouseyoga.com.
What's your Instagram?
Growhouse Yoga.
Great.
Awesome.
Look at me,
G-R-O.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Because I do spell things funny.
She smells funny, too.
I spell funny also. That's the
I couldn't let that one go. Yeah.
I knew that.
Growhouse Yoga.
It's GROHAUS.
So exotic.
I have to be different and
unique.
That's
right.
And also, I'd like to say that if you are going through any issues with addiction, reach out to me. Send me a private message. Mm. I'm going to help you as best as I can help you. And that's how we're going to make this little bit better day by day.
Yes, yeah.
She'll teach you some yoga poses.
Yes.
I'll do my best.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Anne. Thank you again. And before we wrap it up, I also want to remind everyone that we are going to be at Thrive in Hauppauge on May 7th, which is Fentanyl Awareness Day. Everyone pay attention to that day. We will have a lot of things on our Instagram with more information about that. But a big press conference, May 7th, Fentanyl Awareness Day at Thrive. We will also be having a rally, and we'll have more information about that.
So again, thank you so much for coming on. I sincerely thank everyone who supports our cause and understands how important it is to look out for each other and to empathize with anyone we know dealing with addiction. Let's continue to spread awareness about the dangers of illicit fentanyl and promote harm reduction tools like Narcan and fentanyl test strips. Please, please, please reach out to us via Instagram at sbu.playitforward. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know if you have any questions. Don't forget to check us out on Spotify as well. Give our shows a listen. Leave us a review. Please, we would love to hear from you. Fentanyl Awareness Day is May 7th. Please don't be afraid to get involved with that.
I just want to throw this out there. I think Stony Brook students, if you want to get involved with Fentanyl Awareness Day, I do think as a club, we are hoping to maybe host an event where maybe we can make posters or something like that. So if you guys are interested, it's a great way to get involved. So I just want to throw that in there while we're talking about it.
Yes, sbu.playitforward is our Instagram. Here is Kristen with some resources.
If you are struggling with mental health or substance use, you're not alone. SAMHSA offers services and resources for substance use disorder. 1-800-662-HELP or text HELP4U to support. SAMHSA also has the 24/7 info service at 1-800-487-4889. For additional help, visit Hope House Ministries online at hhm.org or call 631-928-2377. Long Island Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence offers support and guidance at 631-979-1700. And you can find more information at licadd.org. Remember, your journey to healing and recovery can start with that first call.
Thank you, Lily, not Kristen.
Now we will have Kristen.
Here you go, Kristen.
All right. CPO at SBU. Check out their SBE page for resources. CPO, it's super user friendly. Check it out to access their resources and training. Fentanyl test strips are also available at many harm reduction organizations and online, such as dancesafe.org and amazon.com. LICADD of Long Island distributes fentanyl test strips as part of their free Narcan kits. Please have Narcan accessible. You can save the life of someone overdosing even when it's least expected. On behalf of Play It Forward, thank you all for listening. We invite you to join us on Instagram, YouTube, and our Instagram is sbu.playitforward, and YouTube is the Play It Forward Project, and we hope that our message reaches somebody. So for now and always,
keep playing it forward.
This is Allison of the Play It Forward Project. Tune into our next show on May 3rd at 1 o'clock as we will be having Ronaldo on for Kurt's birthday show.
Oh, I did not want to.
Ronaldo has done yoga with me.
Yes,
Ronaldo. But okay, again, thank you, Kurt. Thank you, Anne.
Thank you.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you.
Happy Friday, everyone.
Happy Friday, everyone. And of course, WSB. So we have a closing song. Anne, what is the song that you picked? For your brother.
Free as a Bird by the Beatles.
All right. This is for Cliff. Free as a Bird by the Beatles. You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 and 107.3 FM. Be well, everyone, and please look out for one another.
that we once knew.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time.